This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
So imagine checking your monthly cell phone bill, yeah. right? And instead of seeing a charge for, you know, gigabytes of data, you see a line item for AI thoughts.
Yeah, literally paying for thoughts.
Exactly. You are literally paying your telecom provider for raw computational reasoning. I mean, it sounds completely like a science fiction concept, but as of this week, it is actually becoming a reality for hundreds of millions of people. So, welcome to today's deep dive. We are really thrilled to have you here with us.
Yeah, it's great to have you listening.
We have a fascinating stack of intelligence to get through today, and this is all based entirely on a comprehensive briefing report and an incredibly insightful commentary provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim, a former lawmaker. Just to be clear, lawyer Kyung Jin Kim compiled the report and wrote the commentary we're using today.
Right, and for you listening, I mean, this report is a massive wake-up call. We are about to look at a huge inflection point. We aren't just looking at incremental tech updates here. We are analyzing a collision of software innovation, physical hardware, and raw geopolitical strategy.
Yeah, it's actively rewriting the ground rules of global commerce. So the mission for this deep dive is to unpack this intelligence coming out of the 2026 World AI Conference, or WAIC, to really understand how the global technological landscape is just fundamentally splitting in two. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
We usually hear the AI race framed with the U.S. holding this comfortable, almost untouchable lead.
Right? Yeah, the classic narrative.
Exactly. But looking at lawyer Kyung Jin Kim's report, that narrative seems wildly out of date right now. The gap isn't just shrinking. In some areas, it is completely evaporating. So let's look at the software side first. There's this company called Moonshot AI and their new release, Kimi K3.
Right. And Kimi K3 is just a seismic shift in the software landscape. They released this as a 2.8 trillion parameter open weight model.
That 2.8 trillion?
Trillion, yeah. Now, to manage something that enormous without literally melting their servers, it is built on what's called a mixture of experts or MoE architecture.
Okay, let's pause there for a second because, you know, that term gets thrown around a lot in tech circles. What actually is a mixture of experts architecture in plain English?
Sure. Think of it like a highly efficient hospital.
Okay.
Instead of relying on, you know, one super doctor to diagnose every single disease, which would obviously take a ton of time and mental energy, you have a triage nurse.
Right.
When a patient comes in, that nurse routes them to a specific specialist, an expert in just that one specific ailment. In AI, a MoE model doesn't use the entire 2.8 trillion parameters for every single prompt you type in.
Oh, I see.
Right. It routes your specific question to the specific subnetwork that's best equipped to answer it. So it saves an immense amount of computational power while still delivering incredibly accurate results.
That makes perfect sense. And I mean, the results speak for themselves here. The report notes that on the front-end code arena, which is a highly respected benchmark for how well these AI models write software code, Kobe K3 actually beat Anthropic's Fable 5.
It did. It took the number one spot.
I have to admit, seeing a Chinese model beat a top-tier U.S. model in coding benchmarks is surprising, but what really caught my eye is the pricing. It's only $3 per 1 million input tokens, plus it's an open-weight model.
Yeah, and that is a crucial distinction. Open-weight doesn't just mean you can use it. It means they're giving developers access to the underlying architecture.
How so?
Well, if a standard closed API is like a restaurant selling you a slice of cake, an open weight release is them handing you the fully baked cake and the exact recipe.
So you can do it yourself.
Exactly. It allows you to tweak the ingredients and bake it yourself on your own servers.
Oh, wow. And if that wasn't enough, Tencent also officially open sourced their Hunyuan Heistry 3 model, which is nearly 300 billion parameters. And they did this under an unrestricted Apache 2.0 license.
Which is massive, meaning developers can modify it and commercialize it without major legal hurdles.
But wait, let me inject some skepticism here. If I'm a startup founder in, say, Berlin or Austin, can I legally just grab this powerful Chinese model and build my entire business on it?
Technically, yes. The Apache 2.0 license totally allows it. But legally and operationally, you are stepping into a profound minefield regarding data privacy and international sanctions.
Right. The real world gets in the way.
Exactly. Mm. And keep that tension in mind, because how companies survive that exact paradox is the core thesis of lawyer Kyung Jin Kim's commentary, and we will absolutely return to it.
I'll definitely bookmark that, because there's another piece of the software puzzle here, which is pricing. DeepSeek V4 introduced this brand new AQI pricing model that actually uses time-of-day billing.
Yeah, peak and off-peak rates.
Right. You pay peak rates during the day and get a discount during off-peak hours. I look at this and my immediate thought is Uber surge pricing. Or, you know, off-peak electricity billing, but applied to artificial intelligence brains.
It's exactly like that.
But I have to push back here. Are we hitting such a severe energy bottleneck in AI infrastructure that we literally have to price gouge developers during rush hour just to keep the servers from melting?
Well, what's fascinating here is the why. It is a brilliant, market-driven solution to a brutal physical reality. Data centers require staggering amounts of electricity and water for cooling.
Right.
So by creating a financial incentive to run heavy, non-urgent batch processing jobs at 2 in the morning instead of 2 in the afternoon, DeepSeek is actively smoothing out the power grid utilization. They are treating computational power as a finite utility, exactly like water or electricity.
So if we zoom out for a second, what is the underlying strategy here? Why are these companies releasing frontier-level models for virtually nothing or giving away the weights entirely?
It is a calculated wedge strategy. By doing this, China is intentionally creating a pathway for the global south, and really startups anywhere, to break their dependence on Western models.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah, I mean, if you are a developer in Indonesia and you can get state-of-the-art AI for a fraction of the cost, why would you lock yourself into a really expensive US ecosystem?
But here's the catch, right? You can give away all the cutting-edge software you want. If that developer in Indonesia still has to buy a wildly expensive US-designed NVIDIA chip to actually run that software, that independence is just an illusion. Software still needs a machine.
Precisely. The brains are completely useless without the physical brawn. Which brings us to the most critical hardware developments out of WAIC.
Yeah, the physical unveiling of Huawei's Atlas 950 SuperPod is what really anchors this transition. The report says they connected 1,024 Ascend NPUs across 16 cabinets to achieve one EFLOP-S of FP8 performance.
It's a beast.
Now, before we get lost in the alphabet soup, break down what one EFLOP-S of FP8 actually means for the listener.
Happily. An EFLOP is just a measure of mind-bending speed. It's a quintillion calculations per second.
A quintillion? Wow.
Yeah. And FP8 refers to 8-bit floating point precision.
Yeah.
In simple terms, traditional supercomputers calculate math out to many decimal places for extreme accuracy, right?
All right.
Which takes a lot of time. But AI training doesn't usually need that level of decimal perfection to just recognize a pattern. It just needs raw speed. So FP8 trades that ultra-precision for velocity. Huawei is demonstrating they can link thousands of chips together to achieve that speed incredibly efficiently.
And the report notes they are actively stepping up as a direct alternative to NVIDIA. They even have plans to enter the South Korean data center market by the fourth quarter of this year. But let me challenge this.
Go ahead.
Doesn't NVIDIA have an impenetrable moat with their CUDA software platform? I mean, all the developers are trained on NVIDIA's software layer.
So, wait, is Huawei's SuperPod genuinely a plug-and-play alternative to NVIDIA for international data centers, or is this just domestic flexing?
Well, it's transitioning from domestic flexing to a legitimate commercial threat. Historically, yes, CUDA was the ultimate lock-in, but the software ecosystem is rapidly adapting.
Yeah. Frameworks are becoming more flexible, essentially translating code so it can run on non-NVIDIA hardware. And lawyer Kung Jin Kim points out that if highly advanced South Korean data centers are actively considering Huawei accelerators by Q4, it means that software barrier has lowered enough to make the hardware fungible.
That's a huge shift. And it is not just the processors, right? It's the memory chips, too. The briefing detailed the massive IPO of CXMT, Jenkin Memory Technologies, on the STAR market.
That was a massive IPO.
Huge. They raised up to $9.8 billion. The offering was 243 times oversubscribed. They are now the fourth largest global DRAM player. And the detail that really stood out to me, Apple is currently testing their memory tech.
Yep. And we also saw NIO's semiconductor subsidiary, Shenji, showing off their in-house autonomous vehicle chips. Automotive companies aren't waiting for legacy chip makers anymore. They're literally designing the silicon themselves.
So put this all together. What happens to the traditional memory giants if CXMT becomes a major global player?
It initiates a brutal, protracted price war.
Yeah.
I mean, for decades, the memory market has been this cozy oligopoly dominated by Samsung, SK Hynix, and Micron.
Right, the big three.
Yeah, they control supply to maintain high margins.
Yeah.
But CXMT is entering with the massive backing of domestic state capital, so they don't have to operate with the same aggressive profit margins that Western shareholders demand. They can flood the market with highly capable memory chips at a lower cost, which fundamentally threatens the pricing power of the legacy giants.
Which is fantastic news if you are building data centers, but a nightmare if you hold stock in those legacy companies.
Totally.
Now, chips and CAD are abstract, right? They don't mean much to the average consumer until they interact with the physical world. So let's talk about how this tech is getting a body and how it is restructuring our wallets.
Yeah, embodied AI was the undeniable centerpiece of the conference. We're talking about artificial intelligence systems given physical, robotic forms to manipulate the real world.
Over 200 companies focused on embodied AI were present at WAIC. Q2 investments alone doubled to almost $7 billion.
It's exploding.
They were running real-time, fully automated factory lines right on the exhibition floor. One company, Agibot, debuted four different robots with their A3 ultra-humanoid being named the gem of the exhibition.
Right, and they aren't just in the prototyping phase anymore. They're moving into mass production. We also saw Limex Dynamics secure a $200 million pre-IPO round, valuing them at over $2.2 billion. The hardware is scaling so rapidly.
So the robots are hitting the factory floors. But for you, the listener, the shift that will hit your daily life the fastest is actually happening in telecom. This brings us back to our opening hook.
Oh, yes.
China's big three telecom companies are launching AI token subscriptions. China Telecom is offering a plan where you get 10 million tokens for about $1.40 a month. Here's where it gets really interesting. Are we witnessing the end of the gigabyte? Are we literally transitioning from paying our cell phone providers for data to paying them for AI thoughts?
Yes. This is a foundational structural shift. For the last 20 years, telecom providers have been terrified of becoming dumb pipes.
Dumb pipes.
Yeah, meaning they just provide the raw internet connection, while companies like Google or Meta capture all the actual value and profit on top of it.
Right. Like, I pay my cell provider for the gigabytes, but I spend my actual time and money inside other apps.
Exactly. But by shifting from byte-based billing to token-based billing, these telecoms are transforming into AI platform companies. They're offering you a direct integrated pipeline to computational reasoning.
Oh, wow. If global telecoms in Europe or North America adopt this model, it completely upends how we access technology. I mean, it democratizes AI, but it also centralizes the distribution through the utility bills we already pay every month.
And it could upend the entire global API pricing structure.
Right.
Absolutely. Now, you cannot rewire global telecommunications grids, open source frontier models, and challenge semiconductor monopolies without governments stepping in. This rapid dual-track technological evolution isn't happening in a vacuum. It is actively tearing the geopolitical landscape in two.
And the political framing at WAIC made that fracture incredibly explicit.
It really did.
Yeah.
President Xi Jinping delivered his first ever keynote at the event. But the structural reality was established when 29 countries officially signed an agreement to create WAIIO, the World AI Cooperation Organization.
Which is a huge deal.
We have to view this impartially as a formal bifurcation of global AI governance. On one side, you have the U.S.-led Paxilica initiative, encompassing 35 countries. And standing directly opposite is this newly formed WAIC bloc of 29 countries.
The era of a unified global internet is functionally over. We're looking at two distinct competing regulatory spheres.
And the internal regulations are tightening just as fast. On July 15th, China implemented a new triple-layer regulatory system. What I find fascinating is that they are legally treating AI agents differently from standard generative AI.
Well, it's a very pragmatic distinction when you think about it.
How so?
A generative AI chatbot just gives you text, right? It writes a poem or summarizes an article. But an AI agent actually executes tasks on your behalf.
Oh, like taking action in the real world.
Right. It can book a flight, initiate a financial trade, or interact with a database. Because agents take action, China requires special registration and compliance testing for them, especially in sectors like healthcare. They are also evaluating restricting foreign access to their advanced models to prevent tech leakage.
It's the exact mirror image of the export controls we see from the U.S. regarding advanced NVIDIA chips. Both sides are pulling up the drawbridges, and the financial markets are buckling under the pressure. Just look at the timeline. On July 16th, right as this conference was highlighting these geopolitical divides, the Bank of Korea hiked interest rates by 2.75%.
Which was their first hike in over 3.5 years.
Yeah, and that domestic economic tightening collided violently with a sudden drop in U.S. tech stocks overseas. The immediate economic fallout was a massive 6.37% crash in the South Korean KOKSPI index.
It was an absolute bloodbath.
It heavily dragged down Samsung by 8.2%, and SK Hynix fell 11.5% in a single day.
Which perfectly illustrates the extreme concentration risk in these markets. When Samsung and SK Hynix make up such a massive portion of the KOSPI's weight, geopolitical tech jitters in Washington or Shanghai can literally tank a nation's entire stock exchange.
It puts immense pressure on these legacy companies. There were even rumors that Samsung was exploring a U.S. ADR listing. Now, an ADR, an American Depositary Receipt, is essentially a mechanism that allows a foreign company to be traded on U.S. stock exchanges.
Right, giving them access to a much deeper pool of global capital.
Exactly. Samsung officially denied the rumor, but the fact that the market is buzzing about it shows the desperation for strategic positioning. So, let me bring this back to the core question. What does this all mean for the listener? If I'm running a global tech business, or even just investing, how do I survive when the world is literally splitting into two different AI ecosystems?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this brings us to the ultimate conclusion of lawyer Kungjin Kim's analysis. The days of choosing one side or hoping a global tech company can remain perfectly neutral are over. The true survival skill for companies now is a concept called dual compliance.
Dual compliance. Break down the reality of that for a business.
It means carrying the incredibly complex, heavy operational burden of navigating both Western and Eastern AI regulatory nets simultaneously.
Without getting caught in the crossfire.
Exactly. You can no longer build one piece of software for the global market. You have to build a product that satisfies the stringent data privacy mandates and export controls of the PAC-Silicon nations, while simultaneously building a parallel infrastructure that complies with the algorithmic registries and agent regulations of the WAICO nations.
It's like having to play two different games of 3D chess at the exact same time, knowing that if the players on either board catch you looking at the other one, you lose everything.
That is the perfect analogy. It doubles your legal costs, your server costs, and your compliance teams. Companies that fail to master this dual compliance will face massive fines or be entirely shut out of half the global market.
Man, delaying a strategy is no longer an option. Well, we have covered an incredible amount of ground today. We started by looking at Kimi K3's MoE architecture redefining open-weight software and DeepSeek pricing compute like off-peak utility power.
Yeah, massively.
Then we examined how Huawei's SuperPOD and CXMT's state-backed capital are threatening the traditional hardware monopolies. We moved out of the data centers to see Agibot's humanoids on the factory floor and discussed how your cell phone bill might soon charge you for AI tokens instead of gigabytes.
And we anchored all of those technological leaps in the stark reality of a bifurcated world.
Right, where the creation of WAICO formalizes a split in global governance, sending tangible shockwaves through financial markets from Wall Street to Seoul. The ultimate takeaway from lawyer Kungjin Kim's intelligence is undeniable. For you, whether you are managing an investment portfolio, building software, or simply trying to stay informed, the era of a single, unified global internet and tech ecosystem is officially behind us.
Which leaves us with a critical, almost philosophical question to ponder.
What's that?
Well, if the future of AI hardware, training data, and regulation is strictly split into two geopolitical hemispheres, will the fundamental logic, morals, and biases of the AI assistants we use every single day soon depend entirely on which side of the Silicon Curtain their servers happen to be sitting on?
Wow. That profoundly changes how we trust the technology we invite into our lives. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the tech around you and keep exploring. We'll see you next time.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
For more from the same network, follow Daily AI News from Seoul on Apple Podcasts.